This podcast is intended for adult audiences only, and listener discretion is advised as we explore mature topics with a sex-positive and open-minded approach. So remember, the opinions expressed are personal and not professional. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Pineapple Express Podcast, your weekly dose of sex-positive vibes and open-minded conversations about swinging, sex work, and non-monogamy. Join us as we delve into the world of modern swingers, exploring relationships, pleasure, and empowerment. Each week, we will tackle controversial, sex-positive topics through the lens of a millennial swinger. Get ready to embrace the steamy and sensational journey ahead and ride along with us on the Pineapple Express. Welcome, my Pineapple Express friends. I am stoked because today I have an amazing guest. So I have Alex Alberto, which Alex is a queer and polyamorous storyteller and educator. They actually grew up in Montreal and currently live in upstate New York. And their essays have been published in Huffington Post, Write or Die Magazine, and elsewhere. And their plays have been featured in Dixon Place and Theater Row in New York City. Entwined is their first book, and you can connect with Alex on Instagram and TikTok at ThatAlexAlberto and learn more about their work at alexalberto.com, which I will link all of those in the show notes. But yeah, you guys, I'm so excited. So a little backstory about me and Alex. So it was about a week before our first non-monogamy event in Cleveland, which if you don't know, I have a new-ish group called Open Love Society, and it's a Cleveland-based non-monogamy group where everybody from whatever relationship structure define themselves as is allowed to come to these social events. We're working on play events, though. So I was contacted by Alex and they were like, hey, I'm going to actually be in town on the day that you're doing this event. Can we find a way to collaborate? And I'm like, oh, please come to the event, bring copies of your books, because it was a couple of days before the book was coming out. And I was so excited to meet them. I had heard about the book through other friends within the non-monogamy space. My friend, like Infinite Polyam, talked about the book. And then my friend Annie Undone, which Annie has already been on the podcast. But yeah, so I knew about the book. I knew it was coming out and I was just super excited. And meeting Alex was so phenomenal. They signed a copy of my book and I was like instantly reading the book when I got home. And I was just so excited to see what it was all about. And I love it. I love the fact that they add some of the play stuff in there because, you know, I'm also a thespian, so I enjoy a good play. And I just absolutely love everything about the book. And I don't know what I was expecting to when I read the or before reading the book. I think I was kind of expecting it to be just all about polyamory and just like stories because it's called Entwined: Essays on Polyamory and Creating Home. So I thought, oh, this is just all going to be about polyamory, right? No, there was like some swinging stuff in there and some really cool stuff just about being a human and growing into this like relationship structure of polyamory and like dismantling hierarchy and like that relationship escalator, all that cool stuff. So I was just so impressed with the book and I was like, Alex, you have to come on the podcast. We have to talk about this. So thank you, Alex, for coming on the podcast. I am just so thrilled to have you here and I'm thrilled to share this with all of you. If you have not purchased a copy of this book, I highly recommend doing so, which I will link it to in the show notes. And, you know, you can purchase it on Amazon or you can purchase it on, you know, at different book places. But it's more helpful for Alex if you purchase it on their website. So I will link that, of course, and get you a copy of this book because I really feel like this book meant more to me personally than like when I read the Ethical Slut, just because it seems more 2024, it seems more millennial to me, right? Like it, just going through the different stages. And Alex was extremely vulnerable. And this is a beautifully written piece of art. So I definitely recommend getting you a copy. So without further ado, here is Alex Alberto, The Written of Entwined, Essays on Polyamory and Creating Home. So before we dive into today's episode, I want to take a moment to talk about the incredible support that I receive from all of my sponsors. As you all know, creating this podcast is a passion of mine, but it's also an endeavor that requires a lot of time and effort and resources to keep this show alive so that I can give you guys the content that you deserve on a weekly basis. So thank you to my sponsors so that we're able to focus on, you know, this educational content. And I love that they help cover the costs associated with hosting services, equipment upgrades, and sometimes fueling my coffee addiction to keep my creative juices flowing. I'm kind of kidding there, but not really. But more than just financial support, our sponsors are companies and brands that I truly believe in. They offer products and services that I think that you guys, my very valued listeners, can benefit from. And I would never endorse something that I didn't truly believe in myself. So when you hear me mention our sponsors, know that these shout outs aren't just a formality. They're a testament to the effort that we bring to this show and the ears of this episode and all of my episodes. So by supporting them, and you're supporting us and you're supporting this podcast in a real way. And this is so that we're able to have these conversations, share stories, and of course, build community. So stay tuned for our sponsor segment right now. And, you know, check out all these unique promo codes, discounts, and offers that they've provided exclusively for you guys. It's a win-win. You get a great deal and you're also directly contributing to the longevity of my podcast. So as always, thank you guys for listening and a massive thank you to all of my sponsors. Are you exploring the expansive world of relationships and seeking a path that honors your true self? Discover Conscious Love Connections, your compass to navigating non-monogamous and sex-positive intimacy and relationships with confidence and care. At Conscious Love Connections, we cater to all relationship styles, swinging, non-monogamy, polyamory, specifically single men, but everyone is welcome. It's a judgment-free zone because we know that love in all its forms deserves to be celebrated. My coaching isn't just about embracing your sexuality. It's about deepening your intimacy, communication, boundaries, and understanding. Conscious Love Connections is here to empower you in creating relationships that reflect all of your values and desires. Join me for workshops, one-on-one sessions, couple sessions, or even intimate group sessions. And I also offer a monthly peer support group for swingers. Together, we're going to create a safe space for learning and growth where you can flourish in your partnership or with all of your partnerships. Don't wait to begin your journey. Visit my website at consciousloveconnections.com and step into a world where love knows no bounds. Tune into, obviously, this podcast series and learn more about my coaching and my coaching style and help create tools to live your most authentic life. Conscious Love Connections, because love should be as limitless as the stars. Hey there, Pineapple Expressers. Are you seeking a splash of excitement in your dating life? Well, get ready for triple, quadruple, or even an orgy of fun with ThreeFun, the leading dating app for open-minded singles and couples. Are you interested in exploring the swinger or polyamorous relationships? Maybe you're a couple looking to add some variety to the bedroom. Whatever your preference, ThreeFun is designed to connect you with like-minded individuals who embrace open relationships in all forms. Dip your toes into the dating pool where judgment is left at the door and freedom of expression is the norm. With ThreeFun, you'll discover a community that values consent, respect, and the pursuit of pleasure in all forms. As a millennial swinger, I love how user-friendly ThreeFun is, and signing up is easy and discreet. You can customize your profile, set your preferences, and when you're ready to embark on your journey filled with thrills and connections, start sharing with other individuals. all in one simple swipe. Safety is the top priority for 3Fun. With private photo albums and the latest security features, your personal information stays just that, personal. You're in control of your experience at all times. So why wait for excitement to find you? Download 3Fun today. There's a link in my show notes and join the largest community where fantasies come alive. 3Fun, let your curiosity roam free, and who knows, you might just find that trio or that couple of chemistry you've been searching for. Hey, Upside Down Pineapple people. Join the millions of couples enjoying amazing sex with Promescent. I personally love their variety of products they offer, and their aloe-based lube is the only lube I've ever used that doesn't throw off my pH. Brad loves their delay spray, which is clinically proven to help men last longer in bed. Their products have a 60-day money-back guarantee and free shipping on orders in the U.S. over $10. Their shipping is discreet and private, which is perfect for us in the swinger lifestyle. Make sure that you go to www.promescent.com/Kylie for all your discreet sexual health needs. My link is in the show notes. Promescent helps you live your best upside down pineapple life. Hello, my Pineapple Express friends. So I have an amazing guest on today. So their book just dropped last week and it's gotten a lot of great reviews within the non-monogamy community. So Alex Alberto is here. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So could you give my listeners just a brief rundown of like and introduce yourself, who you are, and you know, being in the non-monogamous space, like what brought you here?
Sure. So I'm a writer, or I like to say storyteller, because I actually got started doing a storytelling show before I wrote a book. And my work focuses on non-monogamy, polyamory, and queerness, including pansexuality and genderqueerness. And yeah, I've been non-monogamous for over 10 years. And my first book kind of goes through this journey that I've had and how my identity and relationship to non-monogamy has evolved over time in the past decade. Oh, and I should say, I'm originally from Montreal. I'm French Canadian. Sometimes people wonder the accent. That's what it is.
I was just going to say, like, because I read in the back of your book, like how it introduces you. I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't realize you were from Montreal. So that's pretty awesome. I love the fact that you go through a journey, right? Because when I started in non-monogamy, I did the same thing, except I did it on social media. So that's been interesting. But my first question is obviously, like, what was the inspiration to write Entwined? You said in the book that it's been a long time coming. So what really inspired you to share your extremely vulnerable stories with the world?
Yeah, so I think when I got started with non-monogamy, I was reading a lot, and I was reading, you know, the very popular how-to books or self-help books. And a lot of them did help, but I was really craving narratives, like stories of people, and what does it look like for different people? What do their relationships look like? What do their lives look like? And I think even if I was so invested in wanting to build a non-monogamous life, I found myself kind of, I don't know, maybe not finishing all of the how-to books, because I really gravitate towards stories, and I became hyper aware of just all the programming that had been just done growing up, seeing all the love stories and the movies that always center, you know, around a love triangle, and there's always choosing the one. And I kind of wanted more stories, and I think we need so many more and a wide diversity of stories. But the book was just my first attempt at saying, okay, let me just show a very personal story without telling anybody what they should or shouldn't do. Just, hey, here's what my life looks like. And then people can decide if they feel seen by aspects of it, if they want. It's almost like a discussion, a starting point for them to say, ooh, like this makes me think that I might want something like that or different, or ooh, I don't want that in my life. But at least it's not prescriptive.
Yeah. And that feels so similar to my journey, again, on social media. Just like when I started all of this, I just wanted to share my journey with people and seeing how that evolved, which what reading the book really it was an evolution. It truly was an evolution for you, and I love that. And I think that that's one of the most amazing parts of non-monogamy. One of the most beautiful parts of it is the evolution process. And I love that you shared that with people. And I absolutely love the book. I gave the other copy to my friend and she like cried. She was like,
Oh.
oh, she was so happy. I mean, I really think that this book is such a beautiful, and it's so different, right? It's so unique. And I think you're right. We do need more diverse stories when it comes, because a lot of times people tell you how to do non-monogamy. And there's really no right or wrong way as long as it's ethical and consensual, you know? And
Yeah.
I love that. So I want to know like how you define polyamory and what does the book aim to challenge with common misconceptions about polyamorous relationships?
Yeah, so that's interesting because how I defined polyamory for myself actually has evolved over time. And you do see that in the book. I think actually at the very beginning of the book, you see me struggle with even the word polyamory because even though I was unpartnered, single when I was exploring non-monogamy at first, I was sort of clear that I did not want monogamy. I did not really know how it worked or what it would look like for me. Eventually I did, get a partner and we called each other primary and we were much more in the swinging realm of things at the beginning. And I did not want, love was kind of a line, like, oh, we will not love other people, but then over time, I did fall in love very quickly with another person. And so eventually it became okay. I am polyamorous. I like polyamory, but it was a very hierarchical version of it where I had my primary partner and then everybody else we saw less often. And in the hierarchy of needs, their needs came second. And you'll see me in the book what in my introduction, I do say that I don't want to define what is ethical or not ethical for people. I think it's so nuanced and it really depends on the situation and the people. But for me, the way I treated my secondary partner at the very beginning of my journey was not great. And I learned from that. So then eventually polyamory became much more expansive for me. But I think that where I define a bit of a difference between polyamory and maybe non-monogamous or swinging is sort of the intentional commitments to multiple people and the acceptance of, oh, we will love other people. It doesn't mean that all relationships will look the same or will have the same weight or presence in people's lives. Like some people do hierarchical polyamory and it works very well for everybody. For me, over time, it has become less and less hierarchical.
Yeah, and I think that that's, and I love that you're saying, like, I always say this too, ethics and morals and those kind of value systems don't necessarily come from other people. And we can't define that as a community. It comes from, I feel like, within what are your ethics and what are your, and the partners that you're involving, right? And that's all about communication. And it's that relationship escalator, right? Which you talk about in the book. Can you kind of define what the relationship escalator is and kind of go more in depth what that means?
Sure. So, relationship escalator is typically the assumption that once you start dating someone, your relationship will progress and follow kind of the same steps, whether it's something that you actively want or not. So, it's typically very heterosexual. So, and it's, moving into becoming exclusive, moving in together, getting married, having children, and, dying together. And also something that is a bit implied in that relationship escalator that I have started to question a lot in my life, and I see a lot of monogamous people also question, is just the one romantic relationship being the central part of your life and your friendships kind of taking a back seat as you get more and more serious and higher in that relationship escalator with the partner. And it's really interesting because a lot of monogamous people will read my book and that's what they take away. It's they don't take away that they want to open their relationship by any means. They'll just say, oh, I should actually ask myself what I want in my relationship. And maybe my friends can be more important and more prioritized than I actually am doing right now.
Yeah, that's like I've heard the term platonic polyamory, which is like kind of a newer term, not a lot of people have heard this, but when I would bring this to my friends and I would talk about it with some of my, personal friends, and they would be like, "Oh my God, that explains my relationship with my friends. I love them, but there's no like sexual feelings, there's no like romantic feelings, but it's a love, a deep honest love." And I think even, having terms like this and having an understanding, internalizing that and say, I really do love my friends. I think that that's an amazing thing, an amazing takeaway from the book as well. I totally agree. And I'm glad that monogamous people see it like that, because I think that it helps us build more of a loving and harmonious world when we can start to have these introspections, which I think in a lot of ways is what non-monogamy is all about, is creating love and harmony between everybody. So what are some of the themes of the book that transcend polyamory and speak to universal aspects of relationships, which we kind of just answered a little more, or but if we could just answer that a little more, like if you're a monogamous person, how can the relationships and the aspects of love and stuff like that, how can that speak to the monogamous population?
So a lot of what I hear is kind of breaking down the different aspects of a relationship, even if monogamy and sexual and romantic exclusivity is one of those aspects that they want to keep. So it's communicating very intentionally about each aspect. So that can include expectations for communication. How often do we want to communicate? And how do we need phone calls? Do we need texts? Do we want to cohabitate in the future? Is that something, even when you start a relationship with someone, is that a goal that we want to have? Do we want to share finances? Do we want to do I come with friends that are, you know what? My friends are going to be here at Christmas and I will travel to see my friends if they move away, or, that kind of thing. And also, there's a little part in my book where I talk about how I've learned that I really, really love sleeping alone. And I used to feel really ashamed of it. I used to think, oh my God, if I don't sleep with my partners, then it must mean that I don't love them, as much anymore, or our relationship is not healthy, or it's not what it used to be, when really it doesn't have anything to do with that. And I've gotten the feedback from a bunch of monogamous people, oh my God, having two bedrooms is brilliant. So I think it's just kind of getting rid of the scripts that we were given and trying to go from a clean slate. And yeah, I think that's a big, that's a big takeaway I hear. And I just realized I didn't answer the second part of your question earlier, which was, are there misconceptions in polyamory? And I did want to address it because I think you posted something fairly recently on your social media about polyamory more recently in mainstream shows and how they call it polyamory, but really what it is, it's swinging. But there's such stigma around the word swinging and they should just call it that. And I thought it was brilliant because I hadn't thought about it this way, but the polyamorous community is often sort of very disappointed and sometimes angry at some of the depictions that are coming in media. And that just comes from the fact that, one, we're so starved for representation that people just want the one very kind, each person has the specific kind of representation that they would like. And because we're so starved, that's the one that they think should be represented, when actually, if we had enough and a lot, then there would be room for all those kinds. But part of it is also almost mislabeling it. And I think, because of that, partly because of that, a lot of people who don't know much about non-monogamy think that polyamory is all orgies and sex clubs and swinging, which are great, but it's not just that. And the few memoirs about polyamory that are already out, they do explore the sort of monogamous couple opening up to explore sexually a lot. And there's less representation of, well, what does it look like when you actually commit to multiple people? And so that's one of the things that I wanted to build to in my book, even though there is still sexual exploration, and all that, but I wanted to basically make it more well-rounded by adding this other aspect of it.
Yeah, I watched, there's that show that just came out, which me and my friend Andrea, Infinite Polyam, we're gonna do a podcast all about representation in the media and polyamory.
Oh,
But
amazing. I love Andrea.
I love her too. Yeah, but the specifically talking about this show that just came out, the From Couple to Throuple. If you don't know, it's a bachelor style show. And they talk about polyamory a lot, and it's not all terrible, right? Like, there are some good themes in it. But the issue that I personally had was the very over-sexualized version of it. And I feel like, even with swinging, and I talk about this a lot, there is this representation of even swingers that, like, we and some swingers do just are just here for the sex, right? But there's so many of us who are creating relationships and creating really amazing friendships and personal relationships. And I think that I really wish that the media would look more into that. And that's why I think books like yours are so important, is because of that representation that, like, we're human. This is the human experience, and the human experience can be sexual. The human experience can also be, hard, and there can be breakups, and there can be beautiful moments within this experience that don't involve sex and pleasure, which again are great things, but it's not all of it, and it has to be well-rounded. So I definitely am appreciative of that. And when I was reading the book, there was some things about swinging that you actually brought swinging up quite a few times, and I was a little surprised, because I was like, well, this is a book about polyamory. There's no way that they're going to bring up swinging. But I just thought it was so funny, actually, when you said, I think it was in the beginning of the book, you talked about SLS and your experience with swinglifestyle.com, and how it was stuck in the 90s. And I literally chuckled when I was reading it, because I say that all the time and it still is. But yeah, can you kind of give the listeners some insights into your experiences with the swinger lifestyle and how those experiences have changed or evolved over time?
Sure. So yeah, swinglifestyle.com. And I think there was another one, I forget. Maybe there was adultfriendfinder.com that I might have signed up for. But basically, I had just moved to New York City, and I thought, okay, I don't think monogamy works for me. But back then, this was over 10 years ago, so there was a lot less than there is now. And back then, the idea that I could go on a regular dating website and ask for non-monogamy was just completely impossible in my mind. So I literally just Googled, and then I found those websites. And I was a single person who identified as a woman then. I presented really femme. So it was just interesting to look at those sites and be, okay, is that legit, first of all? And creating accounts. And then obviously I was flooded with messages, and I kind of had to sort through. So how I started was definitely being a very typical unicorn, where couples would take me out. And at first, it was really exciting and it was really empowering, honestly, to be able to feel like I was in control and I was asking for what I wanted and I was receiving a lot of attention. And it was a huge turn on for me to be someone's fantasy. I think we talk a lot about unicorns being fetishized and dehumanized, and not like, and I did experience some of that, which led me to eventually seek something else. But personally, there was still a time where I kind of wanted that. I wanted to feel like someone's fantasy, and it was exciting for me. But quickly, I kind of realized that I wanted something deeper, and those couples just wanted to, we would meet, maybe have dinner at the most, but ideally it was, you go straight to the hotel room or you go straight to the bedroom, except dinner on the very first night to kind of gauge chemistry. And so that's why I eventually, I think, fell into a primary relationship of my own, because that's kind of all I saw. Oh, I should say, I also went on my own to a few sex clubs and swingers clubs, which were really fun. notably in Berlin, which was kind of the best place that I've ever been. But then when I got with my partner Don, who I'm still with today, we did also kind of start on the swinging end of things. So I do talk in my book about going to a sex club in New Orleans, and I think we went there a couple of times, and it was really fun and exciting. But very quickly, I think I just noticed that I caught feelings fast, and I just wanted to be able to build more relationships. So I sort of slowly came out of swinging. But, and you and I met a couple of weeks ago in Cleveland at your first non-monogamous meetup, which was fantastic. And I really appreciated our conversation because I hadn't been in conversation with people who are in the swinger space or identifying as swingers. And I had been kind of all of it out of it for a while, but one of my metamors went to a swingers club not that long ago. And I think that people like to see the identity label that you have within non-monogamy as a fixed thing. But I almost see it more, you can also look at it as different needs at different times and different spaces. I might want to go to a swingers club again at some point because that's what I will want at that time, you know? Like it doesn't have to be all one or nothing. It can be a lot grayer. And yeah, that's something that I just found really interesting realizing through my conversations with you.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's really the space that I'm in, and me and my partner are in. You know, we st I think, and I talked. I had a podcast with Annie Undone, and you know, they also started in this space of swinging. I think that a lot of people come into non-monogamy. I mean, when we started in swinging, it was to find a woman to, you know, to have these experiences with us. And our goal was actually to be polyamorous. Like, we didn't want to be swingers. We wanted to be polyamorous. We were like, we're going to meet a woman and she's going to be our girlfriend and we're going to build this life with her. And we had no other, we didn't know what, how to do that except for to go to swingers clubs because we were trying online and it was not doing us very well, you know. So I it's funny how over time we've evolved, and that's why I created, you know, the Open Love Society, was because I think that these spaces can be great for everyone to explore their, you know, sexuality in a safe way where they feel safe. Because my experience with a lot of swinger events as a queer person, or as a maybe socially, you know, a socially forward and human rights activist, has been not so, you know, not so pleasant. So I just wanted to create space for everybody to feel safe and welcome, regardless of their relationship structure. Because I think you're right. I think that it can evolve and change, and you can go back to it, and you can wake up one day and say, I want to go to a swinger club, you know, with your partner. And if everyone consents to that, I think it's totally fine. And yeah, I think it's so interesting that you started out as a unicorn, because this was another experience that I had, except I did it on Craigslist.
I
I don't know if you remember Craigslist, but
do.
Yeah, so I was a unicorn for couples. So I always knew that like non-monogamy was a part of me. I just didn't know how to do it. And I think that that is such a common thing with so many non-monogamous individuals, is like, how do we do this? And it's again an evolution. So I just thought it was really cool how often you brought up swinging in the book, because again, a lot of times swingers and polyamorous people are kind of, in a way, we think of each other so different, yet we're so the same.
Yeah, there's almost, because of the issues that you just raised with a lot of swinger spaces not necessarily being queer inclusive, or I don't know, it's almost like a specific kind of swinger only that's welcomed. I think that there's, and also, I don't know, I feel like there's almost some, not that we're pinned against each other, but a little bit, because it feels like there's nothing in common. But really, also because labels are hard. Like, labels don't mean the same thing to everybody. I keep using this reference from Effie Blue, a relationship coach. I heard her in a talk years ago, and she said that labels are helpful to get on the same page, but then in order to get on the same paragraph and the same line, you need a lot more words and a lot more descriptions. And I really like that because being polyamorous to me might mean something different than being polyamorous to somebody else. Same thing with swingers, same thing with relationship anarchists. And it's kind of just a tool to try to begin a conversation.
Yeah, and find, I think labels are good to find your, and I mean, especially in swinger spaces, you know, there's a lot of labels, right? We just mentioned some of them. Unicorn, full swap, soft swap. And what I always tell people is, like, specifically with soft swap or unicorn or anything like that, what does that mean to you when they label themselves, oh, I do soft swap. What does that mean to you? And that comes along with the communication factor of all of it.
Yes.
And it helps us relate to, I think labels help us relate to other people. And I think labels, everybody does non-monogamy differently. I mean, it's so rare to find one relationship that is the same. And that's, I guess, a part of the evolution. We're all at different places and different spaces within our relationship. So I think that's really important to recognize. But, when I first started in the content creating space, I just remember feeling so ostracized from the polyamory community because I felt so different, and I felt as though maybe they felt different from me as well, or maybe they had a misconception of what swinging was based upon, again, media representation, which even on social media, even myself, I have done a bad job at times of representing swinging properly. So I think that that's important too, is like understanding that a lot of us have the same value systems and a lot of the same. I mean, even after reading your book, I'm like, wow, this sounds a lot like me,
Yeah.
But we don't know that unless we are in spaces together, which is why it was so important for me to create not just swinging communities, but all non-monogamous communities, because the diversity within relationship structures can actually be, you can learn from other people. And that can be a beautiful thing, you know?
Definitely. And you can learn from people even if you don't want the same kind of life or relationships as they do, just like we were saying with monogamy.
Yeah, for sure. So you talk a little bit about, you were reading these self-help books. You were, books like Polysecure, I'm sure, is one of them, or like
Yeah, that's a more recent one, but the ethical sluts.
yeah, the Bible.
Yeah, exactly. Sex at Dawn. I think I did more than two also back then.
Yeah, so those are like the Bibles of the non-monogamy self-help books, right? So how do you see your book like fitting into this existing body of literature? Especially because there is so much, especially, as we move on into more of a, I definitely think that non-monogamy is becoming more mainstream. So like, how do you see your book fitting into that?
So, like I said, I think it's almost like my book fits in a connected but different branch of books, which is just all about storytelling and personal stories. There are memoirs coming out, trickling, and I personally think that memoirs and essays are incredibly powerful because I feel like people tend to connect to stories when they know it's true and when they know it's actual stories from people's lives in a different way than they do fiction, even though fiction can be very powerful as well. But I think stories in general can really help creating empathy and understanding and acceptance in people. And so I hope that it's just one contribution to kind of this body of personal stories of polyamory and non-monogamy. And hopefully there will be more and more.
Yeah, I agree. I think I and that's again why being so authentic within telling and vulnerable within telling this, it's hard, but within telling the story of your journey can be really helpful because it humanizes you. When we see the fictional representations, and I would even go as far, me and my partner were on the show Love Don't Judge. I don't know if you're familiar with that show,
No, I'll check it out.
but it's like a reality TV show based upon like non-monogamous and different alternative relationship structures, right? So they add kink, they add, a lot of age gap relationships, all of it, right? And after filming it, we were like, this is not This is not reality TV. Like, they fed everything to us. You know, they fed us lines. It was basically like being in a play, which I loved, but it wasn't in, it was a decent representation for sure, but it wasn't as real as it could have been and vulnerable. And obviously, they pick and choose the story that they want to tell as opposed to you telling your story in your words. And that's really why I love social media and how so many people are able to tell their story, and books like this, you know, and blogging, and people are able to tell their story of non-monogamy from their perspective, because I really think that that helps others find representation within that. And it also humanizes us. We're not just this caricature of like swingers and polyamorous people. You know, we don't all look the same. We don't all have the same relationships. Kind of like, I get that a lot. Polyamorous people all look the same. It's like, no, me and Alex look very different, and that's okay. But
Yeah,
yeah.
it's also unfortunately there is still like as the representation grows, it's definitely overwhelmingly white people, overwhelmingly straight people. And I'm white, but I'm genderqueer, I'm also pansexual, and it's even my book is kind of less. It's less in the mainstream, if you will. Like, it's not the kind of story that you see in the mainstream. So we have to work hard, and hopefully it will grow. But I think that's also why some people think, oh, okay, they all look the same, because the little bit of the representation that they've seen is skewed towards a very specific kind of person.
Yeah, and this is especially within the swinger lifestyle. This is something that's been a project of mine to kind of create space that feels safer for people who identify as queer. And, you know, because the swinger lifestyle, you know, obviously when I started in the swinger lifestyle because I was queer, because I was, you know, a bisex, and I st you know, obviously still am, but like a bisexual, pansexual human who was like wanting to explore my sexuality with women. And so that's where I started. And now it really feels like just in those spaces, only one type of person is represented. Or represented, sorry, within those spaces. And it's a very femme presenting female who has sex with other females almost because it feels performative, like she has to for the male gaze. That this is my experience within the swinger lifestyle. And that's why I'm very cautious. I do not have sex with other women for the performative aspect of it, and I make sure that it's not performative for them either. And I don't perform that in front of people because that's a part of me that like I've had to evolve with. But you know, the representation for bisexual males and gay males, or you know, gender queer or gender fluid, you know, or non-binary people, there's really not a lot of representation within the community, and that's something that hopefully someday we fix. And I think, you know, just being open and honest and authentic in that and talking about that is the first step, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think male bisexuality is so underrepresented and also underaccepted, which is a real problem.
Yeah, I was talking, I talk a lot about this on my social media, but I had a cis hetero male comment and say, well, what if we don't want to be in spaces with gay and bisexual men? And I'm like, you don't think there are times where I want to be in spaces with straight men? Like, you know, I mean, then don't be in those spaces. No one's gonna, you know, it's all about consent. Nobody's gonna like make you do something that you don't want to do. So I think it's just having that, you know, saying it with our chest and being like, listen, you know, we affirm bisexual and you know, gay males in these spaces so that they feel safe. Because there it is so underrepresented, even in the poly, I would say the polyamorous community is a little bit better than the swinger community, but even in the polyamorous community, it's there is definitely a lot more representation for bisexual females for
I
sure.
agree. Yeah, I agree. It's a problem in everywhere in non-monogamy, I'd say.
And the way that they present themselves, again, going back to this Couple to Thruple show, is like they were all so femme presenting and so like model like and beautiful, which
Oh,
is
yeah.
just, you know, there are so many beautiful people through all spectrums of the relationship, you know, structures, but they don't all look the same. They don't all look, I think that it was great that there was like diversity. I loved seeing that. And I see a lot more diversity in, you know, in the BIPOC community in polyamorous spaces, not really in swinger spaces. But I just, it's so interesting the way that people are, that polyamorous people are represented. Can you share a passage from the book that you feel encapsulates the essence of your favorite part of the book?
I can. It's very difficult to pick a part that would encapsulate the whole book because, so we didn't talk about this, but my book is not a traditional memoir. It's basically a series of separate essays or stories, but together they do kind of tell my greater journey. And I explored with form a lot when I wrote the book. So there's a play in there, there's, you know, a love letter, there's list, there's a glossary, there's a bunch of stuff. And this particular essay that I'm going to read is usually a reader favorite. It's called From Beginner to Seasoned Polyamorist. And I look at different aspects and how it evolved over time when I was getting started with non-monogamy, when I was sort of, I guess, in the middle of my journey, and then closer to now when I was seasoned. So I look at things that little things like the bed, like how we used to handle like washing the sheets, like in between every like date that we've had at home, and all these different things. And one of the aspects is sex. So I'm looking at how my relationship to sex and how I had sex with people evolved over time. Beginner. Anytime you go anywhere, you look for opportunities to explore new fantasies. When you accompany Don to New Orleans for a conference, you find a sex club. At first, you're turned off by the dance poles and the loud electronic music. But you ascend the narrow staircase, Don behind you, and you find a candlelit library. There are floor-to-ceiling bookcases filled with hardcover books stripped of their jackets, and it smells like rosewood. Four naked bodies are piled on a brown leather couch, moving together in the blob of moans and sweat. You and Dawn sit on a love seat in front of them, and a stunning brunette draped in an indigo velvet dress that lifts her naked breasts as if on the display shelf asks if she can join you, sits next to you, says, "It's my first time in a place like this, and I want him to watch," waves to a lanky person sipping on a plastic cup in the corner. You kiss her and rub her velvety thigh, and she kisses Dawn, and Dawn kisses you, and you watch the sticky blob of bodies in front of you and realize you're about to become one too. Intermediate. You prioritize intimate sex with steady partners like Frank, who geeked out with you about educational technology tools on your first date at the tea house in Midtown. He held his palms together in between his knees, slightly hunched over the table. You were instantly seduced because he was tall and fit, and this posture made him look vulnerable. You go out to eat sometimes, but sex remains one of your main activities. Though not at sex parties. Ideally before 9 p.m. in your soft bed between your fancy silk sheets that you bought off a clearance shelf after you've brushed your teeth and peed, because if you don't pee right before and after sex, you get a UTI. You role play together, something you've never done before, but with Frank, it's not silly. It's hot to try on new cliche personas, like when you pretend to be his step sibling and cuff him to your headboard. Seasoned. You make sex secondary or even tertiary to your life, not just with Dawn, even with new partners. You get to know someone deeply before it gets too physical. Going on first dates takes a lot out of you, but after you haven't dated anyone other than Dawn for over a year, you finally open Tinder. You move to the country and there are no polyamorous profiles in a 50-mile radius, but you luck out on the queer app Lex and start messaging with Kara, a dimpled hiking guide who likes to paint. You speak with Kara on the phone for 2 hours, sitting on a log near the chicken coop. And when you hang up, you call Don immediately, giddy, and he tells you it's nice to see you this high on a new crush. It's been a long time. You take frequent walks with Kara on the rail trail and watch the leaves change. Then she proposes a picnic by a small lake and brings a home-cooked quiche with a lard dough, delicate plates and silverware that she wrapped in tan cloth. You don't usually eat meat, but you happily make an exception since it's homemade and local in her, and the way she arranges everything with affection on your yellow blanket makes you feel like a king. She reads aloud to you, a chapter from her favorite book, and adorably holds it with both hands joined together, thumbs at the bottom of the same page. You decided together to court each other. 2 months pass before you kiss, and you like this new pace. You like savoring your desire, like when you watch Portrait d'une jeune femme en feu laying in bed, and even though your shoulders are not touching, they are so close that you can feel the warmth of her body through your sleeve, and any time she moves, a hint of sage or maybe mugwort ensorcels you. She stays over for the weekend while you're on your period and places her hand on your uterus, kisses your lips, your neck, your nipples that she freed from your shirt, and you come for long, slow seconds with your jeans still zipped on.
I am not going to lie to you. When I first read that, I read it over and over again. It's also one of my favorite parts of the book because it really felt to me personally that evolution process of the sex clubs being this new exciting thing. And then after that, it was like there was more, there was something missing. It was like the sex was great, and with your partner, it was great and it was beautiful, but there was just always feeling like something was missing. I felt like, for me, this is my experience and this is how I felt reading it. And, when you said in season, you know, when you make in the first sentence, when you make sex secondary, that is the space that I'm coming into in my journey, is that I so much more prefer those intimate moments more now than sex. And I don't know if it's because I've done it all and I've seen it all and I've been there, done that and experienced it, or if there's just this part of me that really craves intimacy with multiple people. It's so beautiful. I cried a little bit. There was multiple parts. I'm a very emotional person, but there was multiple parts where I was just like, I felt the words were coming out of the page and just really felt like me. It felt like part of my journey. I'm also a thespian, so I loved the play that you added into the book.
Oh, nice, nice.
And I was thinking, you know, as I was reading it, I was just like, this feels so similar to, you know, when me and my partner came out as swingers to our family. And that's a very vulnerable moment and something that a lot of people fear when they start their non-monogamy journey. And I think that, you know, the play, as dramatic as it was, can kind of encapsulate that as well. Can you talk a little bit about the, I know that you're also a playwright as well, but can you talk a little bit about that? And
So that essay is called Scenes from a Polyamorous Coming Out on Thanksgiving. And it's basically when my partner, Don, who grew up in the South, his parents were scheduled to visit us in New York. And it was, we had another partner, Allie, and she was becoming a growing part in our lives. So we sent them a letter in advance to kind of explain everything about our polyamory. And we also mentioned my bisexuality at the same time. And they didn't want to talk about it, but they still came and they accepted to meet Allie. So the play is basically me, both of my partners, and then Dawn's parents sitting around a table at Thanksgiving. And I wrote it as a play because it was so tense and there was so much in between the lines that were kind of not said. This sort of like sometimes passive aggression or just awkwardness. And I wrote it very, very quickly after it happened. It did end up being very dramatic, but I'm usually in a play, you would have stage directions. You don't really have access to the inner thoughts of characters, but this being in my book, I sort of inserted my inner thoughts and feelings throughout the play. So you kind of get just a well-rounded access to everything. And It was really hard. And I feel like you see a lot of stories of coming out of queerness, but you don't see as many in terms of non-monogamous coming out. And yeah, I just wanted to invite the reader to sit with us for this incredibly tense dinner.
Yeah, I was reading it, and again, as a thespian and as somebody who's also in theater spaces, which, by the way, are very non-monogamous, alternative, and queer themselves, you know, growing up in
Yeah.
theater, I never once, everybody was queer. The guys, the girls, everybody had this, it was like a very gender fluid, right? Because we would play different parts. And you know, my first experiences with non-monogamy and kind of was at a young age because of theater. And I just really, while I was reading it, I was like, oh my God, this could be a great one-act play. You know, this could be
Yeah.
something very beautiful. Especially because the theater that I work with, that they do a lot of, you know, they're very diverse and they uplift. So, you know, I was just like, oh, I just love that Alex was able to put this in writing as a play, because that it just felt so right to me personally. So I
Yeah.
love your book. I
No, I'm so glad to hear it because it was a bit of a bold move when it comes to just, it's not very traditional to kind of write in that form. But I often describe that basically I wanted to write the book the same way I now do relationships, which is I should get to explore any form I want, or it doesn't have to be told in a traditional way. So I also play with point of views, like the excerpt you just heard was in the second person. But not everybody at first in my writing workshops were thinking it might work, and now it's consistently one of the favorite pieces from people. And I would maybe like to think about it as a play. I would probably have to, if it was a real play, because right now there's a lot of my internal feelings, there's probably a way to direct it in a way that incorporates that. But I am very interested in doing maybe a short film with it. And I don't know exactly how right now, the book came out last week, so only a little bit, but I'm glad you picked that up because it's a short piece that encapsulates a lot.
And because, like you said, you know, there's a lot of stories in this form that we see about people coming out as queer or bisexual, but it's the same sort of response from, you know, family members and from people in our lives when we do come out as polyamorous, which is very similar to coming out as queer. It's a tough thing with families, especially, like you said, you know, Don grew up in the South, and this was like just, you know, I'm lucky enough that I grew up in a very progressive community. I mean, you've been to Cleveland, so you see there's a lot of progression here, and it's very open-minded parents, but sometimes we don't always have that. And I think that it was just so beautiful to have it in that form, because not a lot of people think of it like almost like it was like a movie in your head, you know. And
Yeah, definitely.
if you're somebody who has been in that moment with your family, you can really empathize with, you know, the characters. So I think, yeah, that was one of my favorite, so many parts, but that was one of my personal favorites. And I think me being in the theater space helps that too, you know. I think, what was you know, as the author of the book, what was your biggest takeaway from the experience of writing the book?
So that's interesting. I think my biggest takeaway is when I started hearing how people relate to it. And I think one of the things that surprised me is how people from all different kinds of identities or relationship structures end up relating to it. And I think it speaks to the power of narrative because it's when you get so specific and so personal. People, I wonder if it's that because it's not about them, then people, it's not like you're trying to tell people how to live their lives, then they can just be free and calm and just relate to whatever it is that they relate in there. And that has been really beautiful for me once that has been out. people, even cis people, relating in a new way to, I have an essay called Queer en Français, and it's about my gender queerness and how language, French, my native language, has kind of impacted that because French is a very, very gendered language, much more so than English. And I wasn't even sure if I would put it in the book at some point, but I thought, you know, like I guess for a while I was a little scared that it would be too much for people. I thought, oh, I really need to focus on one thing. So maybe just the polyamory. I shouldn't also talk about gender. And, but then I thought, well, that's who I am. So I'm just going to put it all in. And I feel like I was rewarded for it almost just because that's the human experience. Like you can't do just one thing at a time. And I guess I've been surprised by people's capacity for learning and connecting to maybe new experiences that they've never seen before.
Yeah, and I think, you know, my journey with non-monogamy has also been a journey within queerness. And I think that a lot of people can, you know, find representation in that because a lot of us, when we start on our journey starts because of our queerness. You know, specifically with mine was wanting to explore that part of me and knowing for a really long time that I am queer, but I find myself in relationships with, you know, these very cis hetero males constantly. But wanting to explore that sexuality, wanting to explore those relationships, but also doing it in a way where it felt safe. And again, cis hetero males do at certain ones feel safe for me in relationships. So I think, and I think it's also important for cis people to read it as well, so that, because I don't know, again, if queerness and gender fluidity and all that is kind of a newer thing as well, similar to non-monogamy, and I think it's important for them to see that representation so that they understand it
Yeah.
and they can empathize with it in a different way than they are now, because there's so much misrepresentation again in queer, you know, in the queer community. So I think that that was really imp I think it was important to put in there, you know, and I'm glad that you
Thank
did.
you.
Because I know that that couldn't have been easy, and I know that it was probably very vulnerable for you,
Definitely.
because, you know, again, the misrepresentation and not feeling safe, and in certain spaces. So I do get that. So my next question, and you know, what's next for you? Like, are you planning to explore similar themes in future work? Or, you know, do you have any different projects in mind? I know it just came out on last Monday, but like, where do you see yourself in the future?
Sure. So one of the projects that I'm launching probably in the next month is a magazine in a newsletter format on Substack to basically host more stories of polyamory. So I'll be writing some stories monthly, but also be curating other people's stories. So kind of short stories that are all essays, so all true from people's lives. And something that I'm interested in doing is interviewing people. So there are a lot of people in the non-monogamous community who are not writers, but they might have a great story and they might want their own personal experiences reflected somewhere. So I'm really excited to try to interview lots of people who have very different kinds of relationships from different backgrounds and craft a narrative from that. So basically, this need of more stories that I said was the driving force behind my book. I want to continue doing that and bring other people in. So that'll be called Entwined Mag. So, you know, the magazine version of the book, and it'll be at entwinedmag.com. And that's my next big project. Right now, I'm also focused on just, you know, trying to get the book in people's hands. And I'm really grateful that you invited me to come on your podcast.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I talk about this a little bit when I do I did like a intro for the podcast, but I know that you can buy the book on like obviously like Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, but I did talk on, you know, different bookstores and stuff, but I did talk about a little bit how if people, you know, they should buy the book on your website and we'll have that linked. But
Amazing.
where can people find you if they want to learn more? And, you know, where can people find the book? And, you know, how can people support your work?
Yeah, so you can learn about my work. I also teach writing if anyone is interested in starting to write themselves at alexalberto.com. My book is for sale there. I do want to mention the audiobook, which I read myself. So if any listeners are into hearing stories, that's also a possibility. And you can buy the book from my website, and you can buy it on bookshop.org, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, all the different places. And on social media, I'm at that Alex Alberto on both TikTok and Instagram.
Awesome. And any last words about the book Entwined, Essays on Polyamory and Creating Home? Anything you want to say to our Pineapple Expressers?
Just if there are listeners who are scared of the word polyamory or who feel like that might not be for them, I would just invite them to still check it out because, like I said, it's not a how-to. It's not convincing you that the swinger lifestyle is not where you should be. But I think it can just be like when you watch a movie, you often immerse yourself in stories that are not your own, and I'm sure that you would get something out of it, even if it doesn't change how you approach your swinging or your relationships at all.
Absolutely, I agree. I totally, and I think that's a normal thing for like people to be afraid of labels and words. But I, from a swinger's perspective, I really thought that the book was beautiful. And I think that anybody can see themselves represented in some of the characters within the books, or even if you're monogamous and you like reading and you like hearing different diverse perspectives on relationships, I think it's beautiful. So guys, go out and get yourself a copy of Entwined. You will not be disappointed, I assure you. And thank you, Alex, for riding on the Pineapple Express with us.
Thank you so much for having me.